one of the things that came out of Occupy was this notion, and maybe the best thing coming out of it is the 1% and the 99%. And what stems the tide of the 1% getting richer, and especially it's been so exacerbated since the quote-unquote bank bailout. What stems the tide of the 1% getting impossibly richer and the people getting the things they need, healthcare, infrastructure, opportunities to live a decent life? What do you think does it?
Well, Juliana thinks it's electoral politics.
It's an unanswerable question, right? Well, how long will the people sustain this inequality? How long will the 99%, if you like that phrase, take it? Which we don't know the answer. They seem to be, we seem to be continuing to take it. I don't know.
One of the great inventions and programs of Western capitalism was to invent the middle class as a buffer, right? So as an aspiration, right? So that now if the middle class
goes under
as it's and becomes proletarianized in a variety of ways, as I think is clearly the case, is the trend. I mean, not just in quote, of the recession, but of the it's hard to imagine otherwise. That may change, but I have no optimism whatsoever of the kinds of insurrectionary pushback from so-called 99%. I mean, other than just like the example in Tunisia, like you never know what might spark something that
could take off.
Yeah.
What about things like the $15 an hour minimum wage in SeaTac, Washington, and Keshama Sawant, the first socialist elected to a city council in 100 years or something like that? Does that cause for hope at all? Are you people...
Gene Wong was... a lot of people thought Gene Wong would be the most leftist mayor in the country, the mayor of Oakland. She comes out of various leftist social movements and, been arrested in different protests, but that didn't turn out to be the case.
Yeah. Deck chairs. It's deck chairs. But I think people should... I mean, I like it that people should get $15 an hour.
At least.
Yeah. And again, whatever, the $15 an hour could be something that, whatever, it leads to a discussion of, what are basic rights, a basic right is, the Cornell West discourse of, dignity, right? And, everyone should be guaranteed, not just healthcare, but, housing and living wages and...
education.
Right to, et cetera. Now,
sounds like Cuba.
Cuba without embargo, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you say that you said that you're not hopeful, but the book ends on a very hopeful note, a very positive note. I think the ending is leaves optimists like me thinking that there is a way out. So you did have a happy ending. Is that just?
Well, we left out the coda chapter where they all get smashed
under a tank
by the cops. Yeah, that's the sequel takes place in jail and it's around grand jury resistance.
And cell phones are ringing next to corpses at the end of it.
Well, we talked about how to end the book, and I remember asking Juliana, how do you normally end your books? And I can't remember the phrase you used because it's an anaphoria. I don't know, some poetic term that. She used some big word I didn't know, but she was being self, self-deprecating, thank you, but, normally I would go to the lyric, the lyrical moment or something like that, not that she writes poems that are sort of, that end with an epiphany of, and then we all hugged each other or, love is the answer or something like that, but the gestures, towards something, and we knew we didn't want to do that, or we felt the limitation, we're writing fiction, so we can invent whatever, right? But neither were we going to be and then they're going to take up arms and win. And, that seemed absurd, too. So the way the book ends, some of the scaffolding of the form of that last piece, which is quite different than the rest of the book, actually comes from, speaking of alternative forms, from hypnotherapy scripts, which often use, Juliana knows more about them than I do, but often use really interesting language. It's often metaphor based, but towards forms of like visualization, and you know, whatever, to quit smoking or whatever. Finish my dissertation. You know, Juliana did one for me, but they're really, to me, they're fascinating forms of language use, right? And so I was very interested in using some of that mode of this idea of like, what if, you know, you just threw out a spell that, you know, you wanted to bring into being, like this visualization, and that it takes over of itself. You know, it's like, it's not, the book doesn't, you know, how the book ends is not the two main characters coming up with a solution. It's more like they release something that then it's almost like they're like swept up in something too that's larger than them, and that's unpredictable, a little bit messy and confusing. And I think that I don't know, I mean, do you think it's a hopeful, optimistic ending?
Well, they come together.
We became friends again. I don't know. I mean, it has somebody compared it last night to Howl, which I was sort of like, ugh. But, you know, I mean, you can see a little bit of that sort of like aspirational, maybe more than inspirational, or something like that. Yeah. But we tried to like keep it from something like that would be that felt false,
right?
Or trite. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Should someone want more information about your work, what are the websites that we direct them to?
Mine is davidbuck.com. It's BUUCK.
I don't have one right now.
She's Googleable.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I enjoyed the book very much, and I heard what George was saying about the innovative nature of it, even if just the descriptions, but also the way it was carried out, especially near the end. There's this, you know, you talk about the poem as a high energy construct, and the energy is very intense in moments. And thank you for doing it. Thank you for being here, coming to Seattle, for allowing me this time with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great.